Hey, all, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson. Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, Scott Horton Show. All right. So, check this out. Thanks to Brad Hoff for tweeting out the link last night. I think maybe I got dropped from the email list or something here, but Andrew Coburn's got a brand new one in Harper's. Welcome back to the show, Andrew. How you doing?
Hey, Scott. Great to be with you.
Very good to talk to you again. And, hey, great to read you. And check it out, guys. A special relationship. And it's not about Israel. Actually, I spoke too soon. It's a little bit about Israel. It's maybe a lot bit about Israel. A special relationship. The United States is teaming up with Al-Qaeda. Again. Really great piece here. Great to see this in Harper's. Hope it gets a lot of attention. Hey, there's a single page button on the right side there, guys. You'll like that. Use it. Use it wisely. And you can find the link, from my Twitter feed, of course. Alright, so, you know, one thing I really like about this article is how you take us back to the old days. You were a reporter back then, and, so obviously know a lot about this stuff, and you really give us, I think a pretty unique history of the CIA intervention in Afghanistan in the 1980s. I mean, not entirely unique, but it's very interesting to read and good. And then, you know, the very early blowback from that, the two-way pressure valve, or whatever it is, as you call it in here. So take us back. Tell us some stories about Ronald Reagan's support for the Mujahideen in Afghanistan in the war against the Soviets in the 1980s. Oh, or unless you want to start in the Carter years.
Well, I do. Yeah. You know, everyone's forgotten this is such ancient history, but it's really why we are where we are now. You know, you could draw a straight line from then to San Bernardino, I guess. Yeah, I am starting with the Carter years because it was in those years that Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's national security advisor, conceived the really brilliant scheme of supporting Islamic groups. I don't know if we can call them terrorists yet, but anyway, Islamic sort of extremists in Afghanistan, which had never really been an extremist. It was a very pious Muslim country, but they weren't extremists. They were kind of, they weren't hard over about it. You know, they were Sufis. They were quite gentle type. A gentle type of religion of Islam, really. Anyway, he was supporting them against the leftist regime, which, as he boasted in an interview later, with the express idea of getting the Russians to intervene, which he wanted to give them their Vietnam, which, you know, he hoped, therefore, to bring down the Soviet Union, but in the meantime, start a war, which he was amazingly successful in. He started a war in Afghanistan, or, you know, promoted a war, which killed 1 million people. And I've never seen or heard a flicker of regret from him on this. Anyway.
Yeah, he always boasts about it. In fact, I'm sorry, I got to do this. It just take a few, like not even a minute, but I just got this soundbite brand new from a friend the other day, sent it to me. This is actually Zbigniew Brzezinski in Afghanistan addressing the Mujahideen, Andrew.
We know. Go ahead. Of their deep belief in God, and we are confident that their struggle will succeed. That land over there is yours. You'll go back to it one day because your fight will prevail, and you'll have your homes and your mosques back again because your cause is right and God is on your side.
Because your cause is right and God is on your side, he says.
Oh, what a turkey. Anyway, so then, you know, Reagan comes in and this is, you know, really believes in the cause. And so the CIA pours money in and weapons. Now, the excuse, they've always said that, oh, you know, we didn't know where it was going. We just gave it all to Pakistani intelligence and they decided who got it. And that excuse is there because it turned out who was getting it were the most extreme Islamic fundamentalists, people like Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, who had made a name for himself early on in the early 70s by throwing acid in women's faces if he thought they were showing too much of their faces. Later on, he earned a reputation for skinning prisoners alive. He was a very, 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 very unpleasant guy who would have nothing to learn from ISIS and, you know, our current monsters. So, I mean, that excuse that, oh, well, we didn't control it, it was all the Pakistanis, is there because Gulbuddin, actually, he was getting, he was the largest recipient of US aid by far. He was our favorite Afghan. What I say in the piece was it's all baloney that, you know, that they were hands off. They were very hands on. In fact, one of the, you know, more secular, moderate, you know, anti-Russian resistance people at the time said, the CIA micromanaged the campaign. So they were definitely involved. They selected the people who got the money, and the people who got the money were these, you know, fanatics who were the, and among them, not only was Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, but was a very intriguing character called Abdullah Azam, who was considered the father of the Arab Mujahideen. And he not only got, you know, got a lot of support. He came here on numerous occasions. He was in and out of this country all the time with official blessing to recruit people to go do jihad in Afghanistan. So this country was a recruiting ground for these people.
Hey, let me ask you something about that too, by the way.
Go ahead.
Now, I think, as far as I know, this comes from Ted Gunderson, a former FBI agent, but who's a complete lunatic. But on the other hand, it's at least supposedly, you know, documentation and pieces of paper that talk about that, you know, supposedly at least link Osama bin Laden to some of these trips with Abdul Azam in the 1980s, and that he was here in the country and traveling under the name Tim Osman. And I wonder whether you know if that's true, that Osama bin Laden himself
that.
Ever
I've
came.
I've never seen supporting evidence, and you know, there was no, people have looked into Abdullah Azam quite carefully. I mean, would be happy to believe that. I'm not sure. I mean, I'll leave it open. I don't know. But Azam certainly had official blessing here, and he had back in Afghanistan or in Pakistan, he had this bright young Saudi rich kid, Osama bin Laden, who was like his sidekick. And that was really the birth of Al Qaeda. So moving forward.
Well, in fact, I'm sorry to step on you here, but I'll just add one more thing here too. Eric Margulies has told the story on the show quite a few times about how in 1989, Abdullah Azam told him to his face that when we're done with the Soviets, you're next, Yankee imperialist. And, and that Margulies was shocked by this because here, we're your buddies and only communists call us imperialists. So that's ridiculous. And then he started explaining about, you know, American military role, you know, the American military role in the Middle East and how it was going to come to an end one way or the other, and how Margulies took him very seriously back then.
Right. Well, Azam was, he was murdered in the end of 1989, and there were a lot of candidates for who did it, maybe bin Laden himself, but his widow told actually my Leslie Coburn, my wife, who did an investigation of all this in the early 90s, that she was convinced that the CIA had done it. Now, you know, take that as you like, but it might have made sense, not just for what he was telling Eric Margulies, but what he was also saying, maybe even more serious, was he was going to take the tribe, their methods, of, you know, what they'd been doing in Afghanistan, what they'd learnt, and tactics and techniques to Israel.
And well, that's where we'll pick this conversation up on the other side of this break. Bear with me, Andrew. We'll be right back. Y'all, it's the great Andrew Coburn writing in Harper's, America's new, again, alliance with Al-Qaeda. Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment, MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to MPVEngineering.com. All right, y'all, welcome back. Sorry to Andrew Coburn and everybody for the hard breaks here. We got to do what we got to do radio. Talking with Andrew Coburn, author of Rumsfeld. Oh, you got to read that. And also Kill Chain, which is great. But you got to read Rumsfeld, His Rise, Fall, and Catastrophic Legacy. And he wrote a bunch of other books, too. And here he is, again, writing at harpers.org, where he's a such-and-such editor, fellow, something. And this piece is called A Special Relationship. It's about America's alliances with Al-Qaeda back in the day. And brand new. So we're going to get to the Syria war in a minute. But right where we got interrupted at the break, Andrew, you were saying that your wife reported that she was told back when that it was the CIA who had killed Abdul Azzam. Doesn't sound like it was 100%, but it seemed like maybe they had the possibility there. But so, and then you were saying that, and that had to do with a possible threat to Israel?
Well, yeah, Azzam, it was Mrs. The widow Azzam who told told Leslie that.
Oh, so yeah, that's a pretty good source.
Yeah, no, she was very, very convinced of that. It wasn't just stray gossip in the bazaar. Yeah, yeah, Azzam was saying that he wanted to take the jihad to Israel, which obviously would not have been. That would have been bad enough bringing it here, but bringing it to Israel would have gone down really badly. So. Who knows? But the point I want to get, what I want to stress is that, you know, this whole thing, recruitment of, you know, of extremists across the Arab world and in this country, as I was explaining earlier, it had a twofold purpose. One was to bring, you know, cannon fodder to the front line against the Soviets, but the other was to get rid of people. Abu Hamza, who, you know, became a notorious, well, you know, is now doing 300 years or something for terrorism in some supermax here in this country. He said that he explained at the time, he said this was a vent. The idea was you got rid of, you know, the Saudis, the Egyptians, the Yemenis, and even the Americans, the Tunisians, could get rid of, you know, what they regard as troublemakers by sending them off to fight in Afghanistan and, you know, maybe hopefully get killed. But they didn't all get killed, of course. And as the U.S. found out in 1993, when a group of jihadis, including someone who'd been, a couple of people who'd been recruited in this country, tried to blow up the World Trade Center, did kill a few people. They tried to bring the whole thing down. This was the first indication that this scheme had gone badly wrong. And there were further, you know, this went through the 90s until, you know, the big demonstration, 9/11, 2001. Nonetheless, unfortunately, this hasn't really deterred them. You'd think they'd give up after that and think this is a bad idea. But no, fast forward to the Syrian war, where it turns out that we've been funneling and we've been enabling our allies in the Middle East, Qatar and Saudi Arabia principally, and Turkey, to support, fund, supply the same people. I mean, these extremist jihadis, people like Al, who are really part of Al Qaeda. They changed their name because that was an Al Qaeda scheme to sort of brighten up their image a bit. So there's some of them, they're called Al Nusra. There's another big group called Ahrar al Sham. And they are, you know, literally Al Qaeda by another name. And we give them our support, either sort of at one remove, like Al Nusra, because they've got a bad name. But this other one I mentioned, Ahrar al Sham, you get, you know, learned articles, op-eds from the Brookings Institute saying these are really not so bad. You've got former U.S. diplomats, you know, touting for them, saying they are not so bad. These are the guys who, you know, give you a public flogging for Friday prayers, and God help you if you're a woman in the territory they've covered. So we are, through our arms supply network in Syria, we are supplying arms to what is Al-Qaeda. I mean, it's a pretty shocking fact, but that is the case. And these are the people we're enabling to take over Syria. I mean, can you believe it?
Only because I've been covering this the whole time, and mostly because I've been talking with your brother, Patrick, this whole time. I mean, really, since Iraq War II, long before the Arab Spring, but all the way through. So, yeah, I know this stuff, but it still blows my mind. I mean, sitting here reading this thing, I just think, I almost can't believe it. I know I sound like a birther kook when I talk about it. I know that your editors are probably like, man, are we really sure we stand behind this headline? And then, yeah, of course, what are we going to do? It's true. We have to run it. It's true. Yeah,
it's true. It's true. I think, you know, people, you know, it's so hard. I mean, I've had, you know, ex-CIA people get violent when you say this to them. You know, this is such a deep, terrible secret, you know, the way they helped start all this in the first place. This enabling of the most extreme factions in Afghanistan, really for this, to fight the Soviet Union. And even after the Soviets had left, even after their war was won, they went on doing it, you know, just for the heck of it, really.
Sure, in Bosnia. Remember, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was a veteran of the Bosnia War, where America was on their side.
Good example.
And the Chechens.
And
you write about the Chechen thing in here, don't you?
I mentioned, yeah, I do. But I, you know, there's another point about the Chechens I didn't have time for, which is, you know, the Russians, another story, but Georgia, you know, our friend Saakashvili, who tried to get us into a war with Russia, the Russians kept complaining that we were Saakashvili was helping us funnel jihadis up into the Caucasus, into Chechnya. That was a plan of ours. It was an operation of ours.
In the Bush Jr. years you're talking about.
In the Bush Jr. years, yeah, absolutely. And this was, you know, it didn't get much. I mean, I wrote about it a bit, but it didn't get much commentary in this country. Surprise, surprise. But that was a perennial Russian complaint, and they haven't forgotten it. And I think it's probably true. I mean, I'll go stronger than that.
Sure.
It's true. And of course, but no one paid attention because this was the Russians complaining.
Right. Well, and this is the thing about, and this is the part where I'm kind of confused. I'm anxious to hear what you think about, you know, how you measure the difficulty of turning the ship of the empire around when we adopt all of our allies' foreign policies, like they all hate Assad so much and they hate the so-called Iranian Shiite crescent so much that they've got our government fighting on the side of the 9/11 hijackers against our allies' enemies, when Hezbollah hadn't even attacked us since 1983, and Pat Buchanan at least says that that was the Amal militia that did the Beirut bombing. It wasn't even Hezbollah that did the Beirut bombing. And yet, but we're supposed to prefer Al-Qaeda to Hezbollah? And even a year and a half after the declaration of the Holy Caliphate and all of this stuff, it's amazing to me, and I'm not calling for invasion, but you're the one who said it, and I think you're right, that their policy still is to use Al-Qaeda, if not the Islamic State. They don't seem to mind the Islamic State that much, but to use Al-Qaeda, at least, to still try to get rid of Assad, even after the Russians have intervened and said absolutely not and, you know, called our bluff.
Yeah, it's right. I mean, it is amazing. I try and, you know, I trace in the article, there's an important point I talk about it. 2011, when the Arab Spring happened, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, it broke out, dawned or something. The U.S., the Obama administration thought, this is great. This shows we can, you know, ally ourselves with the Arab Street, with the, you know, Arab Spring, all these calls for democracy, and then we'll be the good guys in the Arab world, not Al-Qaeda, you know, not bin Laden jihadis, and we'll, you know, that'll do us a lot of good. And this is the, you know, this is bad news for Al-Qaeda, they said at the time, and, you know, the New York Times immediately reprinted. And all the pundits agreed, you know, and this was, you know, this was the end of the old war on terror. We'd finally won through this. What they didn't seem to notice was Al-Qaeda was saying the same thing. Hey, this is great for us. This is, we're overthrowing all these corrupt police regimes that the Americans were sponsoring. And, you know, now this is, you know, scope for our side, and we're really going to go places here. The U.S. then said, I hope they're not making this too complicated, but the U.S. then said, or was saying, well, to outflank Al-Qaeda, we will, you know, we'll link up with moderate Islam. Moderate Islam is the way to go. And they identified that as the Muslim Brotherhood, this venerable organization, which was originally set up by the British to be, you know, anti-nationalist and anti-communist. What they, again, failed to notice was the Muslim Brotherhood was, like, linked to Al-Qaeda.
Now, you know, I'm sorry, Andrew... We got these hard breaks, and usually I just record through the break, but unfortunately the way I'm set up, I can't today. Is there any way I can hold you one more segment?
Of course you can. Of course you can.
Okay, great. Now, it's going to be a long top-of-the-hour news type break, so everybody take a break. We'll be back at 6 after with Andrew Coburn.
Okay.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
All right, kiddos. Welcome back to the show here. Now, I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. On the line, Andrew Coburn, author of Kill Chain. Buy it for yourself and for your friend for Christmas. Or Hanukkah. Or Kwanzaa. Or, you know, another time. A special relationship. The United States is teaming up with Al-Qaeda. Again. And, of course, we're talking about support for the al-Nusra Front, the moderate al-Qaeda in Syria. And I like the way you noticed this and wrote it up in the article here, Andrew, the part about how, well, ISIS likes to brag about their savagery and put out videos of them shooting a bunch of people in the back of the head and that kind of thing. And then it's so easy to go from, wow, those ISIS guys are really brutal, to, wow, al-Nusra is so much less brutal than ISIS. They're moderate by comparison. When, no. These are the guys that did the coal attack. These are the guys that killed 4,500 of our guys in Iraq War II. These are the guys that did 9/11. Keep your eye on the ball for a minute. For God's sake, they're the ones who are still loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City. ISIS has never actually attacked the United States.
Well, right, you know, and this is all part of a calculated campaign. Al-Qaeda, back about 10 years ago, starting about 10 years ago, they thought, we better clean up our image a bit. This is, you know, this, because they had the reputation at that point of being like, you know, like ISIS has today, chopping people's heads off on TV and so on.
Yeah, Zarqawi and his guys.
So, yeah, in Iraq, Zarqawi. So they said, no, we got to cool it a bit and, you know, act nice. And in fact, Bin Laden even discussed changing the name. Maybe we'll change our name. You know, we can clean up the image. And that was just before he was killed. And in fact, they did change the name. I mean, not in, you know, in the center, but all these offshoots in Syria, in Tunisia, in Yemen, all over the place. They were they, you know, they started giving themselves new names, Al Nusra, Arar al-Sham, Ansar al-Sharia, across the place, not in Yemen actually, but in Libya and in Tunis and in, a lot of, you know, the sort of, a lot of Africa. So that is why, you know, they can get away, you know, get away. Well, the government can get away now with sort of, when it turns out we're supplying them and they're, you know, they, you could go on YouTube and you'll find 100 or 500 videos of Al Qaeda offshoots in Syria using U.S. weapons, U.S. supplied weapons, and say, well, that's not Al Qaeda. That's just, you know, part of the moderate opposition. So it, you know, the scheme is working very well.
Yeah.
It just shows what idiots we have running things.
Well, and the thing is, you know, for the historians checking the archives in the future from now, this is being recorded in December 2015. We're 4.5 years into this, and we've had the same story over and over again, where CIA-supported, armed, and financed groups go over in mass numbers to the al-Nusra front, or lose a battle to them and lose all their materiel. Or whatever it is, over and over again. And then now we're supposed to just accept that, well, they've got a coalition. They call themselves the Army of Conquest now. And, yeah, it's true that, Zawahiri's guys are part of it. But so are the lovely Arar al-Sham, who, as you said, are basically the Muslim Brotherhood, right? Which is,
yeah,
more or less the same damn difference anyway. Patrick, your brother's been saying on the show, there's no difference between these groups. They're all bin Ladenites, you know, at the end of the day.
Well, in fact, Arar al-Sham, their sort of spiritual mentor is Abdullah Azam, I was talking about earlier.
The
founder of Al-Qaeda, you know? So, and they, you know, the, and it's so disgusting. I mentioned in the article, I couldn't resist, that a little while ago, four eminent pundits from the Brookings Institute published an article saying Arar al-Sham, not so bad, not so bad. What you have to know is that Qatar, the principal financial sponsor of Arar al-Sham, is the state of Qatar, the kingdom, whatever you want, kingdom or emirate or something. And Qatar just gave $15 million to the Brookings Institute. So, you know, you can't buy a think tank pundit in Washington, but you can rent one. And
you'd think they'd launder the money a little bit more cleverly than that, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Through one of the Republican PACs or something. Yeah, it'd be good.
And this is all, of course, you know, America fighting against itself, or our government fighting against the American people on the side of our enemies, as a way to try to compensate for how bad they screwed up with the Iraq War, with Iraq War II, right? You know, there's a great quote.
Yeah.
You have a great quote of Bandar in here about the Shia, but I wanted to add the one about that I learned. It was in the Financial Times from Prince Turkey. Prince Saud al-Faisal said to John Kerry, "Daesh is our response to your support for the Dawah." Meaning America's intervention in Iraq and fighting on the civil war on the side of the Shia from 2003 through 2011.
Exactly so. I mean, that's, you know, the Saudi, you know, this gang of gangsters, really, this gang, the Saud family that control Saudi Arabia and, you know, have the big leverage over the price of oil and so, and have bought $150 billion worth of American weapons. You know, they are completely panicked by Iran and by the Shia. And, you know, I quote Prince Bandar in the article saying, you know, a billion Sunnis have had enough. It's a bad day. It's going to be a bad day for the Shia. I mean, this is a religious war where we are allied really on the wrong side. I don't say we should ally with the Shia, but we're certainly enabling these horrible groups like Al Qaeda. And even ISIS in a way, you know, because ISIS couldn't really survive without its pipeline from Turkey. And Turkey's our ally. And when, you know, we support a good NATO member and, you know, they're buying American weapons all the time and, you know, coming on as a sort of, you know, there's a few problems like the suppression of the press and arresting journalists and torturing people, but we forgive all that because they're our ally. And meanwhile, they are really the sort of back office in terms financially and in terms of supplies for Daesh or ISIS or whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, so now what about this? What about Turkey now invading part of northern Iraq near Mosul? They say that they're just training the Peshmerga. But when the Baghdad Shiistan government told them to beat it, they said, no, we're staying. And I wonder what you think is going on there.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, what they're thinking about first and foremost, of course, is the Turk, the PKK, and the Syrian extension, the YPG or YPD. So they want to bolster their own sort of position for first in as dried plank that in northwest Iraq. And this group that they're, their excuse for being, having gone into, sent these troops into Iraq is they're helping to train this group, but they're not really Peshmerga. What they are former policemen from Mosul who are run by this guy, Kapaji, who was a former mayor of Mosul, who says he's going to liberate Mosul from ISIS. I mean, good luck with that.
How many men does he have?
Not too sure. A few hundred. I mean, it's a pretty, it'd be nice if someone could do it, but I don't think this guy is going to do it. But, that's providing the excuse for the Turks to send troops into Iraq. I mean, I see it primarily as some part of some move against the PKK, against the Turkish, the Kurdish, opposition armed opposition in Turkey.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny because, of course, not funny, haha, but funny in an ironical way that America and Russia are both backing the Kurdish YPG, the Syrian branch of the PKK, as you said there, in their war against the Islamic State. And so, this whole thing, somebody should really draw a map of the Middle East with all the like color-coded lines of who all is fighting for and against, which all sides are. Tie us in knots.
Need a wall.
Yeah, exactly. Never seen such a knot. All right, listen, you're great. Thank you so much for your time on the show again, Andrew.
It's a pleasure.
That's the great Andrew Coburn, everybody, writing at Harper's. You got to go read this. A Special Relationship, America and Al-Qaeda Again. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday. And The Future of Freedom with FFF Founder and President Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there. ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com.